Hello and welcome to the Business Growth Show.
I'm Adam from Active Internet Marketing.
And I'm John from Octopus Computers.
And we're going to be hosting this podcast regularly, particularly appealing to businesses in the Stamford and Rutland area. We're going to have lots of exciting guests where we can start to hear about their career journeys and how they've got to the place that they are now. And hopefully there'll be lots of advice and beneficial information for people.
So if you want to stay up to date with everything that's going on, drop us a like and a follow and stay in touch. Today, we're joined with Kevin from Landmark IFA. Can you introduce yourself and the business?
Yeah, good morning. So I'm the founder of Landmark IFA Limited and now moved upstairs to chairing Landmark Financial Group. So I back in 2002-03, founded the business. Sort of, I guess, out of frustration of having worked for some of the larger financial services businesses around the UK, moved from one to another when a business was sold.
Yeah.
Promised the earth, delivered absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
Went through the same exercise again. And I guess reached a point where the business I was with was also starting to look for purchasers.
Yep.
And had to consider, did I want to go through the same thing again? Or was it the right time to sort of break away and do our own thing? And I guess the answer now is, you know, it's quite obvious.
How did you go about that first jump into doing it yourself? Because sometimes finding the first employee, first team, first clients is the hardest step.
It was a little scary in some ways. The first thing I did was find a building and spent my sort of covenant period from breaking away from the old firm throwing a hammer around the building and knocking it into place. How did we find? I guess I'd, even at that time, I'd been in the business a few years. I wasn't alone in thinking that working for some of these big faceless organizations was not perhaps the end game. We had quite a clear vision of who and what we wanted to be.
Okay.
And I think that story was quite compelling to a few people.
Yeah.
One or two people that I'd worked with in the past were early joiners, so that made it reasonably easy. The challenge, I think, was sort of opening the shop on day one with a bunch of staff and advisors and not a single client, which is a scary proposition in some ways.
Yeah.
But you know, the challenge today, 20-odd years later, is we get a bit nervous when we get a new client inquiry because we've got a bunch of busy IFAs all with their own clients. And sometimes the challenge is, well, who's got capacity to take on a new client? You know, So it's nice that it's gone from lots of advisors and no clients to lots of clients with no advisor capacity, if you wish. So nice place to arrive at.
Yeah, good curve.
And you said, Kevin, you've got 65 staff at the moment. Was that always the plan? Had you set out to grow to that level?
When I set up the business, and I've got the original piece of paper somewhere, the plan was to grow an advisor firm of 50 advisors.
Right. Yeah.
So we're not there yet. We're 37 as we speak. So, you know, 3/4 of the way to where I thought we might get. In terms of, you know, how have we grown to that sort of number? A few acquisitions. I think both what we call internal acquisitions, which is an advisor coming up to retirement. They have, you know, a client bank. So what we'll often do is we'll acquire their client bank and then we use it as a sort of recruiting hook to bring in new advisors. And done well, and I think the best example of that is we had a really busy advisor who worked all the hours he could, reached a point where I think his health started to suffer because of it. Taking him out of the business into retirement, we replaced him, and this shows you how busy he was. We replaced him with four advisors. Gives you an indication that he was probably working a bit too hard. So acquisitions, external acquisitions as well. So we've made several on the way. Our most recent was 1st of April, where we acquired a firm, BBI Financial Planning, down in South Woodford. The plan is to continue to grow. The good news from Landmark's perspective is that we made a promise years ago that we wouldn't do what a lot of business owners do in our industry, is sell out to one of the big consolidators. And that was a very careful choice, because a lot of the consolidators, they tend to be interested only in increasing client fees, replacing clients in their own pet funds on their own pet platform, which tends to lift the cost of service, the fees to the clients. We made a promise years ago that we wouldn't do that to our advisors. So almost 2 years ago, we completed an employee ownership trust.
Right.
So we're now a wholly employee-owned business.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, and it means that we're never looking for a buyer. We'll continue, well into the future. We've got a shadow board. Six individuals sit on that at the moment. And that tends to be younger population, so people in their 30s and 40s, who the shadow board's a sort of proving ground. A couple of weeks ago, we had our first graduate, shall we say, in Kate Arrowsmith, who has stepped up from the shadow board to the main board.
Right.
And as I say, the idea is that it's a proving ground for those who will be here to take over the next generation of Landmark's business. So that's a really big thing for us to have achieved.
And how have you done that over a sustained period of time while maintaining a good culture? I've been in the office. Everyone is friendly and genuinely smiling.
I think culture is a big differentiator. We call ourselves an egoless business. And I think recruiting is a massive part of that. So over the years we've interviewed and we've been approached by some very high quality advisors and staff. But we've always had this view that if we bring in this individual, we could have one new person in and six could walk out the door. So recruitment is vital. Mm-hmm. And I no longer, but I'm a team sport player. So cricket, rugby, and all those component parts have to, pull together to put in good performances. And I think we use that analogy in the business that, we've all got to be playing for the same team. We don't want any individuals going off doing their own thing. So I think that culture thing is huge. And it was ever present from day one, because having worked at some of the larger institutions in the past, a lot of them are run or at least populated by some very interesting and large egos. So we were very, very keen not to run the same.
So you work quite hard then to make sure that the culture is so strong that not any one individual could pull away from that. You try and create a really strong culture so everyone's full and aligned.
Absolutely. One of the things, I sit down with our advisors twice a year on a sort of one-to-one basis. We chat about what's happening in their world, what's working, what's not. And the one thing that comes back every time from all of our advisors is So long as this business stays doing what it's doing right now, we are here to retirement.
Brilliant.
Now, I don't think there are many firms out there that has a bunch of advisors saying, well, just keep doing what you're doing and we're here for the duration.
Yeah.
Which is good news in a number of ways, but I think, you know, one very key point about that is, you know, we talk about lifetime value of a client. Well, our IFAs are ostensibly our clients. They're the rainmakers in the business. They bring in the investor monies, they look after our investors. So if we've got a 30-something-year-old or a 40-year-old saying, I'm going to be with you for the next 30 or 25 years, the lifetime value of our relationship with the client is, you know, our advisor, is huge.
Brilliant.
And that also stems back to the EOT, them knowing that we're not going to do the dirty on them and sell out to some you know, faceless consolidator. So it all works in quite a sort of virtuous circle, I guess.
Excellent. What do you think the biggest challenges are for the business over the next few years? What's changing in the industry or legislation or?
Yeah, we're forever getting, you know, the latest missive and the latest bulletin from the FCA. And I think keeping, thankfully, as a firm of our size, we've got enough people to cope with that. I think the smaller firms are going to struggle because the pace and the rate of change and the requirements placed upon us by the regulator can be pretty challenging. I think we were keeping an eye on such things as AI and advice delivered by methods other than human interaction and face to face. Am I overly concerned? I think we need to be, but I also think we have to understand that, you know, our client demographic is such that, you know, if there's a lot of clients who look a little bit like me, the chances are they're not yet, at least, going to trust AI and a machine to become their advisor.
They don't want advice from a chatbot,
Exactly.
Not yet, anyway.
And I, you know, I'm driven to distraction. If ever I try to use, you know, one of these things, I just find them more of an annoyance than a help. So
that's fair.
Yeah.
And what about training? Because if you've built the team up and it sounds like they're joining reasonably young in their careers, how much do you have to spend training up the team or how much do you have to invest in them?
Oh, yeah. So we've got the whole sort of spectrum, really. So we have advisors joining us that have perhaps worked in the industry for 30 years. We have, you know, most recent was a graduate straight out of, you know, out of university who he's still in training. So the whole spectrum in terms of taking an advisor from another firm, which is, you know, a lot of what we do, it's really inculcating them into the sort of cultural mindset of Landmark, plus the, you know, sort of training compliance, the sort of more dry stuff, if you like. That is maybe 15 to 18 months done end to end. With a sort of new starter, there's, you know, a series of exams they need to do. So that could be a 2 or 3 year process. Staff, 15 to 18 months to have them competent, you know, with the back office system and the likes.
It's constant investment then.
Yeah, completely. Yeah.
And you explained exactly why the advisors find the business so appealing. And once they're there, they really enjoy it. They don't want to leave. Like you said, they want to see out their career there. And I guess that's quite a big appeal for the end customer, the client, the people they're advising, that they know that that person's going to be there for many years to come to advise them.
I think two things. For clients of our slightly younger cohort, then the chances are that the clients will retire before the advisor, which is sort of good news for everyone. But where we have an advisor reaching retirement, we have a stock of IFAs that are continuing to work in the business.
Yeah.
So the good news from an investor's perspective is the name, you know, providing the advice doesn't change.
Yeah.
In that Landmark continues to service that client, but it will just be a different face of advice from our stock of existing clients, or occasionally we'll have a couple of new faces joining the business to take over a book of clients from a retiring advisor.
Yeah, brilliant. And what else do you do as a business that is particularly appealing for those clients or unique or different in terms of what you're offering to them?
Yeah, and the reality is we know, you know, as much as a business wants to have a USP, I don't think we, maybe everything we do and the sort of culture is a bit of that.
Yeah.
I think the only thing that I can sort of point to is, and this sort of thing has existed within Landmark from day one, and we call it DYP.
Right.
And DYP is deliver your promise.
Mm.
So if I say to, the trainee administrator, I will, you know, have an answer for you by next Tuesday, they'll get an answer.
Yeah.
If an advisor says to a client, I will, you know, do that by such and such a time, it will be done.
Mm.
Of course, there are times when things get in the way, but it's a culture within the firm, and it goes northwest, east and south, a bit clunky, but it applies across all of the business, up, down and sideways, if you like.
Integrity does sound like a USP.
Well, yeah, but I think that would be damning, you know, a lot of other very, very high quality firms. Yeah. You know, when we know that there are a few firms out there where that word perhaps doesn't exist, or doesn't exhibit itself. But I think there are a lot of other very, very good firms out there that do what we do. And so the USP is that mixture of culture, knowing we're here into the next generation, being an egoless business. It's all of those things, I guess, if that makes a USP.
I like DYP. I think I might steal that. That's really good.
How has your role changed from initial founder taking the risk, having an office and staff and no clients, through to now having the spare time to sit a podcast?
Yeah, I think quite significantly. So, you know, when we first set up, I advised clients.
Mm.
I haven't done that for about 10 years now. So my role has become one of sort of big picture stuff. The fire starter is you know, the sort of accusation thrown at me that you have a million ideas a day and perhaps all but one of them might go straight in the bin. But with having a good quality team around me, that allows me to do that sort of strategic thinking, and having the guys in the business that can then execute.
Yeah.
So yeah, my role's become more about, what are we trying to do? Where are we trying to get to? What's the message?
Mm.
What, you know, are we hitting our sort of targets of, you know, the long-term vision? That's predominantly my sort of stuff.
Is that the bit you enjoy the most, or is there still a single element?
No, giving up client work, and it was for a very good reason, which I'll come back to, is hugely liberating because trying to look after investors alongside doing the work that Landmark needed of me. I think I got to a point where I had to say to clients, look, and again, this goes back to DYP. If I'm only picking up your file when I've finished whatever Landmark work is that I've got to do, then I'm not delivering on my service promise to you. We need to have you looked after by someone else within the business. I'm always here, you know, if ever you need to call me or whatever. But in order to continue to deliver a proper level of service and one that was delivered reasonably expeditiously, you need someone other than me.
Yeah.
But it was massively liberating. because it was a huge weight off.
Mm.
So,
yeah.
And is it at the bit which you get the most excitement from now, or is it the completion of an acquisition, or seeing growth, or team?
Oh, a bit of everything. Yeah. I think acquisitions are great, and recruiting high quality advisors from some of those firms that I mentioned earlier that really want to make acquisitions but get the end investor to pay for it. I think taking individuals out of that type of regime and placing them into a sort of culture like Landmarks is massively rewarding.
If you had to pick a single career highlight, what would you say that was?
I think it was putting the AOT in place.
Yeah.
Turning the business into an employee-owned business. Yeah. And again, delivering on the promise that we'd made to the advisors that we weren't going to find an external buyer.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I'm not sure they ever believed me.
And if you were going to start again tomorrow, which hopefully you don't, sounds like you don't need to, but if you were, would you do anything differently?
Yes.
What would you do?
Pretty much everything. I was an IFA, but not a businessman.
Yeah.
And I made probably every mistake known to man in setting up a business.
Yeah.
You know, what were the sort of highlights of that? Building a team and a sort of an infrastructure and a sort of cost base for a decent sized business before we got one.
Yeah.
So seeing monies flow out of the business and out of the door for no good reason.
Yeah.
Because we were rather aggressive in what we thought we might achieve early on, not understanding that we had a name that no one knew.
Yeah.
We had no track record. And I didn't see that. I just thought, well, people will join because they know me and they know what we're trying to do. We had people that actually sat and waited for 3 to 4 years, kept an eye on us,
right,
and then joined the business. So yeah, I do a lot of things very, very differently, but all really about that front end stuff.
Yeah, the getting started.
Yeah.
It's funny, a lot of people we meet and get to have these great conversations with, it's a reoccurring theme that often they're determination, their confidence, their commitment to get to a certain point can in the early days also be their worst enemy as well as a strength as well, can't it?
Yeah.
But yeah, obviously it's worked out.
Ultimately, a few sleepless nights along the way.
Yeah.
Are there any particular skills that you've learned that you think are invaluable in growing a business? Or that you've always had?
I think that there's a very significant skill that you either have or you need to sort of engender, and that's honesty.
Mm-hmm.
Sadly, I see in our industry businesses that talk a good game, promise an awful lot to staff and advisors and clients, but have no intent. You know, I think they're saying these words where they're sort of fingers crossed behind their back.
Yeah.
We occasionally we've met with some good IFAs and thought, yeah, they'd be perfect for the business. But we've been honest enough to say, it isn't the right time for you to join. We can't give you what you need in terms of client bank or level of service, whatever it might be. And we, very sadly turn people away because it wasn't the right time.
Mm-hmm.
But we've never taken on an advisor and not been able to deliver what we've promised them.
Yeah.
And that, again, stands us in good stead. So we do get advisors joining us because someone they know has joined the business. We've delivered what we said we'd deliver. And then, ex-colleague or friend or whatever it is, we hear about Landmark. Can we come and talk to you?
All of that, it all contributes to your reputation, doesn't it? And the strength of your reputation.
Yeah, I think so. And we said, bearing in mind, we were a Stanford-based business, the one thing we could not afford to lose above anything else was whatever reputation we were building.
Yeah.
Reputation had to be all.
Definitely.
And you only keep it if you deliver what you promised.
As good as your last mistake, a reputation. Yeah, isn't it?
Exactly.
So you've still got some quite aggressive growth plans by the sounds of your original goal.
Yeah.
You're getting there.
How will we get there? Just continue to do what we're doing. Mm. We are fortunate in that we are becoming better known.
Yeah.
One of our plans moving forward is to become much more visible as a business. So that, you know, the social media stuff, website that is perhaps a bit more representative of who and what we are now, as opposed to looking like a little shop in Stanford. And really just keep beating the drum. I think it's being made easy for us by the behaviors of some of the larger consolidators.
Mm-hmm.
So recently we've taken on four individuals who have broken away from that type of firm simply because they just cannot cope with the culture. So they were with smaller firms to start with. Their
got acquired.
Principal has sold the business to a larger consolidator, and they've gone from, you know, a sort of culture like ours to one where they're being monitored, they're being targeted to doing things that perhaps are not necessarily in the client's best interest. One of our key messages to advisors looking to join us that we'll be the recruiter or the acquirer of least disruption.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've got an investor that's sitting on a particular platform in a bunch of funds that you and they are happy with, that's where they'll stay. We're not going to insist that you move them onto our chosen platform because we are take a fee or we own the platform.
Mm, yep.
We're not going to push you into choosing funds that we manufacture in whatever way. And again, you know, so that's a very clean way of running a business, and it certainly will help us move advisors away from that sort of shackled environment to one where they can be, you know, a proper independent advisor.
And it de-risks it for them and for the clients as well, I guess.
Yeah, you know, if an advisor were to join Landmark, so you've got a new name in Landmark as opposed to where they're at, it's the client's one opportunity just to question whether they move with their advisor to the new firm.
Mm.
And if you throw into that mix, oh, and by the way, we're going to strip out all of those funds and replace them and move you onto a different platform, then surely in an investor's mind, they might have questions as to why that's being done.
Mm.
So we have none of that.
At the end of the day, it's got to be what's best for them, hasn't it?
Absolutely.
And right away across the line, it's got to be...
Clients always get the vote.
Yeah, absolutely. Is there anything new that's coming up that you'd like to mention or promote or talk about?
I think that we will start becoming much more visible as a firm. I think that's important. We've been described by other people as, you know, the industry's best kept secret. So I think that's something we need to change.
Nice compliment.
Yeah. In terms of developments, not really, just about continued growth. Development, you know, what we do is we advise on other people's products.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not a product innovator.
Yeah.
You know, the advice process isn't likely to change massively.
Mm.
What do we have on our radar other than, you know, the sort of marketing activity? Getting to understand slowly but certainly what stuff like AI is all about.
Yeah.
I think more, again, within the business, we have a sense that we'll use AI not to replace any current member of staff, but to help with the staff's heavy lifting and maybe move to a point where AI can allow us to keep our current numbers of staff, but enable them to service a higher number of advisors. But one thing we won't allow AI to do is to replace any of our human beings.
It's a tool to improve what they can deliver. That's make them more efficient in other ways. Not to say they aren't, but you know, to deliver things quicker, perhaps, rather than replacing them as the asset in the business.
Yep.
Nice. Yes. Very good.
Brilliant. I've really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
I've really gained a lot from it. I'm sure
other people have as well.
Thank you very much for coming in.
Great. Yeah, thank you.
Cheers.
Thanks for watching today's episode. I hope you really enjoyed listening to our guest and us waffle our way through a fun conversation.
If you'd like to appear as a guest on the Business Growth Show, then do send us a message on LinkedIn and we'll come back to you and get it scheduled.